And good evening and welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 16. I'm Tom Harris, your host. Prophecy has come true. I have important news. This according to MSN Movies. I feel so, like, caged. Totally caged. That's what Lindsay Lohan worryingly muttered at a London club a few days back, at least according to an eavesdropping reporter from the London Daily Mirror, who says the seemingly self-confined starlet later attempted to curl into a ball on the floor of the hotspot. But maybe the reception was just better down there as she traded messages with fickle flame Samantha Ronson, who was in town doing her DJ thing with Lindsay, supposedly in hot pursuit. She spent most of the night furiously texting Sam Ronson. She spent most of the night furiously texting Sam Ronson and wasn't much pleased about the text she was getting, a spy surmises to the paper. She just wouldn't stop saying she felt caged. She was just not there at all, and it was really like watching a broken girl in the middle of a complete breakdown, reiterates the mole. Everyone with her was actually very concerned about her. She seemed like a girl on the brink of self-destruction. There's more to the article, but I'm not going to read it because it's not really relevant. What did I tell you? What did I tell you a few episodes ago when I posted my 10 psychic predictions for 2009 and 2010? Lindsay Lohan will have a breakdown. Oh, come on. Sure, it's predictable. I mean, it's kind of like predicting that it's going to rain somewhere in Scotland. But, nonetheless, that's 2 out of 10 of my psychic predictions have come true. 20% of my psychic predictions have verifiably come true. I told you I was going to be more accurate than the psychics. This actually puts me at double the accuracy rate of the popular psychics, especially Sylvia Brown, who actually had no predictions come true from 2006 to 2008. Now I have 2. So, good for me. Now that I've broken my arm patting myself on the back, it just reiterates what I'm saying, that if somebody is paying attention, if anybody is paying attention to what's going on in the world, they can make a quote-unquote psychic prediction and have it actually come true. That's what I've been talking about, folks. That is indeed. Now, the first prediction, as you may or may not recall, and you could go back and listen to that episode, is that new secret suppressed information will come out that shows that most of the presidents of the United States are, in fact, related to each other. And then about 10 minutes later on the episode, I actually revealed that information, which is true, by the way. And if you want to look up Holcomb family history, family name is Holcombe. You'll find that that's actually true, and you can link the Holcomb family to any number of prominent people in America and elsewhere. So, what did I say? Hey, I'm truly a gifted prophet. But of course, unlike the others, I'm not making a profit. Oh, speaking of psychic type stuff, I do have a tarot episode coming up, as I mentioned before, and it'll probably be a couple of shows from now. I'm already pretty clear on the things that I'll be talking about on the show. But what I've been looking at is the idea of having somebody have their tarot read by me on the show. And if I can't find somebody who's interested, then I'll do something else with that segment. But if you are interested, let me know. It's very easy to contact me. You can email harrispodcast@gmail.com. Or you can email me at tom@tomharrisusa.com. Or you can leave a comment on Podbean on this episode. And like I said, I'll probably be recording that show in the next show or two. So no later than a week. I don't record the show very far in advance, and quite often will finish a show the same day that I'm supposed to post it. Well, that's because I tend to put things off, because I do a show every 4 days as opposed to weekly, it does make for almost twice per week. Not that I'm complaining, mind you, because I do like talking to you folks. Now, I would like it better, perhaps, if some of you folks would also talk to me, but hey. Yeah, that's the nature of the beast. I'm still a new show, and people are still discovering it. And I am getting more listeners all the time, which is great. But I'm not feeling the love. So please feel to, email and so forth. I do want to take an opportunity quickly to give a couple of shout outs. And, the first one is, this show's official fan. And even before the show came on the air, I think I had recorded one show, maybe two shows at that point. And I kind of recorded the first three all at the similar time and then posted them all at once when I set up the Podbean account. But my cousin Garrett is the show's official fan. So no matter how bad things get, no matter how lame people think the show is, he is officially the fan. And I guess he's not listening to the show, actually. But I just wanted to give a little shout-out to Garrett there. And also a little shout-out to Irving Distiller, who a lot of you may recognize the name, and that's because he's very active out there in the podcast community, mostly calling other people's shows and making witty comments, and it's kind of an entertaining gentleman to talk to. And I've been messaging him back and forth on Skype recently. And Irving just had his own one-night-only show on the Ross Patzelt radio show. And Ross Patzelt was on vacation this past week, so Irving did a show that aired as I speak, it's Tuesday, aired yesterday. And it's the Irving Distiller Show, and you can go and listen to Irving's show, and it's kind of fun, by going to the Ross Patzelt Radio Show site. And that's rosspatzelt.co.uk. And you can click on that to listen to the Irving Distiller Show. I actually was looking forward to hearing it, and it is what it is, but it is fun, and it was actually good to hear Irving doing something for himself, creating something himself. And Irving, of course, I know when I talked to you, you were talking about how I wasn't really looking forward to hearing it, and you weren't sure how it was going to come out, but The thing is, you got it out there. And so I just want to encourage you to do more, because I'd like to hear you do more stuff. It was entertaining, and I'm sure if you feel so inclined, you could actually do your own show. Well, speaking of podcasts, and I don't have a ton of time to listen to podcasts, but there are a few out there that I like, and I've talked about some of them before. I do listen to Chris Reardon, and he's on 3 days a week. And it's Monday morning, and it's right before I go to work. I listen to the beginning of Ross Patzelt's show, which is a live show, and that makes it difficult for me to participate. But sometimes I can catch the beginning of it. And then Monday after I get to work, I listen to Chris Reardon's show, which is the show that he recorded on Saturday. Then on Tuesday, I listen to Chris Reardon's show that he released on Tuesday. Wednesday, I listen to Dana down in Florida, who does a show called Stimulated Boredom. And he does a lot of content. Now, it is mainly a political show. He does talk about some science topics and some gaming topics and television every once in a while. But it's not a fluffy show. He does often provide a lot of content that requires thought. He's a big World War II buff. He loves to talk about history. He speaks very well. And it is very informative and very interesting. And I can only hope to be half as informative as Dana. But I do hope that some of you will check it out. He has his own website, which I believe is stimulatedboredom.com. I'm not absolutely sure about that, but he also has a MySpace community and a Facebook community and a YouTube channel. Doesn't post much on the YouTube channel. And you can listen to his shows on Live365, which is how I was introduced to him and his work. And he, like I said, he's very informed and very interesting to listen to. And it actually, he provides enough content that it sometimes takes me a couple days to get through it. And he does about anywhere between 4 and 6 hours of original programming per week. Though he just bought a house, and it's been difficult for him to you know, to keep up the pace. But I hope that eventually he'll get back to a normal production schedule and we won't have to worry about it so much. I'm always on the lookout for other podcasts. I was listening to one called, it was a kind of a liberal political podcast called Blast the Right. And that is a very popular podcast because it is meticulously researched. I don't always agree with the conclusions that he comes to. So I don't remember the name of the host. He has a very strong Brooklyn accent, though. Part of the problem I have with listening to podcasts, though, is I really only have the time I'm at work. Now, I have a job that requires me to sit in front of a computer all day, so I do have a certain amount of time at work when I can download a podcast or stream a podcast. So I am always kind of on the lookout for things that I will find interesting. But it is hard sometimes, and there have been a number of podcasts that I've tried to listen to, and for one reason or another, just haven't grabbed me. And I guess that's just kind of the way it is, and I'm sure that's the way my podcast has been for some people. You know, is that people have tried to listen to it and they don't care for it. I guess that's really kind of the way it goes with anything, but especially with podcasts, which are uniquely produced, generally speaking, by one individual at home. I know that there's professional podcasts, and Penn Jillette does one called Penn Says, which is sort of a video podcast that he puts out every so often. But you know, he doesn't actually produce it. He does the videos, but he doesn't actually put them online or anything like that. He does have a YouTube channel, though, and if you're interested, you can go to Penn Says, and that's Penn as in Penn Jillette, P-E-N-N, and Says, S-A-Y-S. And look it up on YouTube, and you can see. He does a lot of libertarian chat, and his shows are usually about, his little segments are about 7 minutes long, roughly. And originally, when I was thinking about doing my own show, I was thinking about doing YouTube videos, because YouTube videos generally are a little short, you know, between 3 and 7 minute segments. You can do just kind of a brief thought and just talk about one topic for a short amount of time. And I found the idea of that very appealing. The problem is that I have a face for radio. And who wants to listen to some old guy complaining about, you know, what he thinks? And I guess that's why I'm doing, you know, this vocal podcast. But the 30-minute format, I think, is pretty good, and you can go into a little bit more depth. So that's kind of where I am. As always, I welcome your comments and your input. If you think there's things I could be doing better, if there's topics you would like me to go into more detail on or to go into less detail on, perhaps, you know, let me know. It's harrispodcast@gmail.com. So the other day on Chris Reardon's show, they brought up a really interesting subject. And it's one that kind of bothers me a little bit when people kind of go off the deep end on it. And they were talking about the Egyptian pyramids, and they were talking about Stonehenge. Now, obviously, these are ancient structures built by ancient people using ancient tools and ancient methods. They are extraordinary. So why is it that so many people want to diminish the accomplishments of our ancient ancestors by insinuating that they could not have possibly built these structures, and that they needed the help of aliens or levitation or so forth to build them? It's a strange idea, and I think it comes right back to the early 70s and the publication of various trash pseudoscience. You know, why did they call it pseudoscience? It's not science. It's science fiction. These trash science fiction books by people like Eric von Daniken, Chariots of the Gods, and that sort of thing. And I just find it extraordinary that, you know, these particular sites, Stonehenge and the pyramids at Giza, are kind of singled out because they are the largest and the most impressive of the various things. But I want people to think about this logically. And I'm not trying to be all, you know, fuddy-duddy, et cetera. So, you know, I think life has enough mystery without creating this fantasy around the mystery. Now, there are hundreds of stone circles in the British Isles and in Europe proper, in Brittany particularly, and nobody has any doubts that any of them were built by people. The engineering, of course, would have been very primitive. They didn't have the technology that we have today. But they were certainly built by people. Now, I think that there's a couple things at work here. People, A, thinking of ancient people as being stupid, and B, quite frankly, racism. And I'm going to start with A, because I think people have to remember that people who lived in the ancient world were not less intelligent than people today. They didn't have the same technologies that we have. They didn't have the same tools we have. Because these are things that have progressed. These are things that started from a very simple simple origin, you know, a hoe or an axe or a knife, and have become more and more complex and more specialized, and eventually you have, you know, bulldozers and cranes and so forth. But, you know, they all kind of operate on similar physical principles, principles of leverage, principles of, you know, resistance, you know, things that ancient people would have been familiar with. And, you know, there's hundreds of these stone circles in the British Isles, yet nobody doubts that any of them were built by people, except for Stonehenge. And then all of a sudden, people just go insane. And kind of the same goes for the pyramids. And the pyramids, I think there's even more wacky people who think that aliens built the pyramids. Well, you know, and there's a number of different reasons why they think that, why this is the case. None of them stand up to any scrutiny, of course, because we know from contemporary accounts that the pyramids took 20 years to build, or a pyramid could take as long as 20 years to build. I think some of them were, you know, they didn't take quite as long. We know where the stones were quarried, because we know where the quarries are, and we can actually go to those quarries today and see partially blocked out blocks of limestone that were blocked out by these Egyptian workers using copper chisels. So we know, you know, we know because we found the chisels, we know because we found the quarries and partially filled stones, that these stones were not cut out by aliens. The other thing is that the supposed engineering of the pyramids is not unfeasibly impressive. They were a great feat, and they are very impressive, and especially for people who didn't have the technology we have today, but well within their capabilities. Because you have to remember, ancient people weren't stupid. They were clever, they were intelligent. They didn't have advanced techniques like we have today. But the pyramids aren't perfect, and that's another thing that kind of it kind of irks me, because a lot of people say, well, they're so precise and they're so exact. Well, they're not. And you can actually read any volume of a scholarly work, you know, studying the pyramids, a scientific work, and you'll know the pyramids aren't exactly perfect. They're not even close to being exactly perfect. And take a look sometime at a picture of the pyramids. You can see it for yourself. And I don't mean, you know, taken from a mile away. I mean taken up right up close. Stones are sticking out every which way. They're not laid in a precise, even line. They're not, all of them are so close together you can't fit a sheet of paper between. That's one of the things that Eric von Daniken kind of popularized, this idea of, you know, their stones are so finely put there that you can't fit a sheet of paper between. Well, you know, they did use mortar. And there is mortar between a lot of the stones, and that would explain not being able to fit a sheet of paper in. But also, you know, they're not really. I mean, there are stones that are actually, you know, rather far apart. You could, you know, fit your hand in between. And, you know, so if you look, just looking at a picture, a close-up picture of the way the stones are fit together and so forth, you'll see the stones are sticking out every which way. They're not perfect. The measurements pyramids are quite good, but they're not perfect. And they are off by, you know, a matter of, you know, several feet on some of the sides. So it isn't exactly, precision engineering, as it's often billed to be. Pyramid power, I'm not even going to waste my time. That was, you know, complete fabrication, came up in the mid-70s and was utterly disproven. If anyone who still believes in pyramid power today is obviously not very well informed. And because I think it's been so thoroughly disproven, you don't hear much about pyramid power anymore. So let me just kind of explain briefly. People used to believe that if you had a little miniature pyramid and you were to put a piece of fruit inside, the fruit would never rot. And they believed that there was some sort of energy field that was created by the pyramid that could sharpen razor blades and, you know, keep fruit fresh and that sort of thing. Utter nonsense, not true. It's, you know, there's no evidence to support any of that. But it was a very popular idea for a while. And, you know, you can preserve fruit much better by putting it in a refrigerator. But my point is, you know, these are incredible feats of engineering. They are scientific and cultural achievements that are very, very difficult to equal. Another myth is that we couldn't build the pyramids today. Well, we certainly could build the pyramids today, but it would be very unfeasible to do so. For one thing, you would need a reason to build them, but the other thing being you would need the manpower to do, actually do it, to cut the stones, to transport the stones, to put the stones in place. And we have a situation, you know, back in ancient Egypt where manpower was not a problem. You had, you know, thousands of people to do this work. And today I think you'd have a hard time assembling a workforce of 100,000 people to put together a pyramid. And it took 20 years to do. If aliens did it, they sure work slow. So, you know, the fact is we could actually build the pyramids today. It wouldn't really be that much of a problem. And we could probably build them much better today and much faster today than we could back then. But the logistics are difficult, and they would be difficult in any kind of a society that is modern. So I just kind of wanted to get that off my chest a little bit, the idea that we couldn't build the pyramids today. Of course we could. We just don't have any reason to do so, and it would be a horribly unfeasible waste of time to do it. When I had said before, I mentioned, you know, point B before, the idea of the aliens building pyramids is a racist idea. Well, it is sort of. Part of the reason why people have a hard time believing that the Egyptians, you know, built the pyramids was because they felt the Egyptians were, you know, too primitive and brutish. They weren't European. They had brown skin, and therefore they were not sophisticated enough to build such structures. And I think that's just a load of nonsense. You can go to the Temple of Karnak, you know, the ancient city of Thebes, and look at the temples there. And these are beautiful, beautiful pieces of work, all very intricate and gorgeous and just, you know, and undeniably created by people. And to demean these artisans who built these incredible temple complexes, and they built the royal tombs, for gosh sakes, going down into the mountainside, carving these tunnels and tombs out of the mountainsides and beautifully decorating them with nothing more than copper tools. That's an incredible thing. No aliens are required. And I think it's a great disservice to our ancient ancestors to imply that they couldn't have done it. Let me give another example. I mentioned before that I have some stone microliths. And these are tools that I found when I was overseas. And these are tools that were created by Stone Age people, pre-industrial, pre-everything. These are people who were hunter-gatherers who created these tools to survive. I also have some later stone tools that were American Indian, Native American tools. And these tools, these Stone Age knives and things that I have, are perfectly ergonomically designed to fit the human hand. Now, does that imply that they somehow had a superior knowledge of human anatomy and what and how most efficiently to make one of these tools? No, of course it doesn't. Of course not. The reason why the tools are ergonomically perfect and fit your hand so perfectly is because they had thousands of years to work on this technology, and because they, you know, it was trial and error. They learned the same way anybody else does, and they created these tools so that they could do the tasks that allowed them to survive. And I think it's quite extraordinary that Stone Age people could produce these things. But let's not forget, they weren't stupid. They were every bit as intelligent as we are today. They didn't have the vast body of knowledge that we do, or the technology that we do, but they managed to survive under very difficult conditions in a very dangerous world. So I don't think we give our ancestors enough credit. I really don't think that we should be giving aliens the credit for the incredible work that our ancestors did. And that's kind of where I stand on that. So next time somebody asks you, you know, do you think that aliens built the pyramids? I hope you'll say there's no way that aliens built the pyramids. What a ridiculous idea. And the same for Stonehenge. You know, the basic mechanics, the basic techniques that were needed to build Stonehenge were being used all over the British Isles to build other structures, the dolmens in Ireland, the stone circles in Ireland and Scotland and in England and in Brittany. These are techniques that were well known to ancient people. They used them all the time. So, yeah, it's, you know, pseudoscience is one of those things that really, it bugs me because of the insidious nature it's had in the popular culture, that these lies and these fabrications have been repeated so many times by so many people. The people almost take it for granted that these are real possibilities. And they really aren't. They're, you know, it's imaginative fiction, you know, designed by people like Eric von Daniken to sell books to gullible people. Now, I'm not against the idea of aliens building, you know, coming to Earth and building, helping ancient people build things as a plot device in fiction. In fact, I kind of like that as a plot device in fiction. It's an interesting idea. As a matter of fact, there's a movie which is based around that very idea, the movie called Stargate, which actually went on to spawn two television series, I think one of which is still going. The first one ran for 10 years, and I think the second one is still running and is on its you know, eighth year or so. I'm not actually sure because I haven't seen Stargate Atlantis. But the idea of that, of course, is that the Egyptian gods, and among all of the mythological gods on Earth, were in fact members of an ancient spacefaring evil race that used humans as a host for their parasitic young. And it's really kind of a neat movie with Kurt Russell and James Spader. I think that's who was in that. And was turned into a TV series with Richard Dean Anderson and Michael Shanks, among other people. And so, if you're interested in pyramids and want to believe in them having been built by the aliens, then, check out Stargate and Stargate SG-1 and Stargate Atlantis if you haven't. And, that's where that idea belongs. Yeah, imaginative fiction. Well, it looks like it's about time to wrap up the show. Thanks for joining me, and I hope to join me next time. Again, if you are interested in having your tarot read on the show, please contact me. It's harrispodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on this podcast, or you can email me at tom@tomharrisusa.com. And if you would like your tarot read on the show, it is a minimal commitment. In fact, you don't need to appear on the show at all if you don't want. All I would need would be an email saying, you know, this is who I am, this is what I would like to ask the cards, and you let me know what area of your life you're asking about, whether it be a job or relationships or just sort of a general reading. All you would need to do is let me know that information. You wouldn't actually have to appear on the show. And with that, I'm going to wrap this up for this week. Thanks for joining me, and hope to see you soon. This is Tom Harris at Tom Harris USA, signing off. Have a good evening.